So, retrospectors, what historical events are we ticking off on this week's run of Today in History?
Well, Monday is the anniversary of the day Roger first published his famous thesaurus.
Then on Tuesday, we say happy birthday, Mr. Potato Head.
On Wednesday, the extraordinary stories of the child soldiers who fought in the American Civil War.
On Thursday, how King James changed the word of God.
And on Friday, what did spam emails look like in 1978?
We discuss this and more on Today in History with the retrospectors. 10 minutes every weekday, wherever you get your podcasts.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Welcome to For Formula One's Sake, the F1 podcast that's really looking forward to this latest episode. Guys?
Sorry, we've just gone to get drinks. You carry on.
I don't get it.
Welcome to For Formula One's Sake, the F1 podcast that needs to leave a pint of beer at the end for scrutineering.
Not gonna fucking happen.
Welcome to For Formula One's Sake, the F1 podcast that will take off our t-shirts for the theme tune.
My t-shirt is staying on.
Mine's been off since before we started.
Welcome to For Formula One's Sake, the F1 podcast, somehow hosted by Alonso, even though it isn't.
I'm wearing a Kamoa hat.
I'm Jika Ayres, and if you don't get out of my way, well, you'll know what will happen. Smashy, smashy. Today, from our various computers in different parts of Europe, we are going to talk about the Hungarian Grand Prix, where far too much happened and we may not get all of it into an hour. From Bottas doing everything he can do to lose his Mercedes drive to Fernando Alonso winning the race, albeit not for himself, we will look back at the Hungaroring hilarity in forensic detail and completely fail to take any lessons from it. That is all to come. Joining me is a freelance motoring journalist who has basically forgotten about F1. It is Phil Tromans.
So the race was on Sunday. It's now, as we record this, Wednesday. The trouble is, Olympics. I've watched so much sport in the last few days, I've completely forgotten about F1. So you'll have to forgive me if various minority sports suddenly crop up in my analysis.
And alongside him is a man who has fruit flies. It is Terry Saunders.
So what happened was I had a friend over and they left half a banana out and I didn't notice it for a couple of days. And in that couple of days, let's just say a whole society of fruit flies decided to move in to the point. Have you ever had fruit flies? Have you ever tried to get rid of fruit flies? It's the hardest thing in the world.
Surely just close the room where the fruit flies are, spray fly spray, leave for half an hour, come back, sweep up dead fruit flies, move on with your life.
I don't think fly spray is a good way to go. I mean, I got some fly paper, which...
What did you do? Try and persuade them to leave?
Yeah.
Did you do a sort of the leaflet campaign?
I left them a letter and like a little row of bits of banana out the window and fuck off.
Had you got a well-reasoned argument?
Well, I was talking to one of my vegan friends and I told them that I had fly paper and they got very annoyed saying that's inhumane to the flies. And there's actually a fruit fly trap.
You're not fucking eating them.
There's a fruit fly trap that you can buy that keeps them all alive. So they all just buzz around in this pot and then you let them out. And obviously when you let them out, they're all going to fly back in the window. And secondly, they only live for about a day. Imagine that's your life. Just like, oh, I've woken up. I'm in this pot. Oh, someone kill me now. So I've taken to hoovering them. So I'm
While they're alive.
So, yeah, while they're in the air. So I think my neighbours must think I'm quite weird because they just see this guy, this Englisher guy with a Hoover, but I'm just holding up the nozzle into thin air. And they must be going, the fuck is he doing? He doesn't even know how to use a Hoover.
Chica, have you killed many things this week?
No, but I've lost my family's respect. So I did that thing where you go and you go to the registry office and you tell them that you are going to get married. Do you know that?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And you say that you know each other's birthdays, etc.
Yeah. They give you they sit you down and give you an interview and stuff separately.
Separately,
to make sure you're
not fraudulently
doing shit.
Precisely. So I learnt all of these things, learnt the birthday and the middle name, you know, so I was not...
Hang on, learnt?
What you didn't know before.
Anyway, but I got myself quite flustered about it, because it's a very tense situation, you know, so I got myself quite worked up. When they were filling in the sort of details for the actual certificate, they asked what my parents' jobs are, and I got really worked up at this because I wasn't ready for that. And my dad is
Are they criminals?
Well, my dad's a retired policeman, but he now helps my mum run her cafe. And now, on my wedding certificate, my dad's job is a waiter. Right, here we go into Listener's Corner. And I know we are all expecting a Valtteri Bottas joke here, but his performance in Hungary was enough of a joke on its own, so let's just get on with it. And we will start with Calamity Bottas himself. Stuart Forsyth says, I thought Bottas had ruined the race after he made one of his usual terrible starts. Instead, it was so much fun. Thanks to the stewards, he will now get to do the same at Spa from even further back on the grid. Alan David says, Bottas, wingman extraordinaire, wants Mercedes to retain him so badly he's prepared to take out two Red Bulls, including Perez's engine, ensuring another grid penalty for Red Bull. Conspiracy time, out of the PK Briatore playbook. And Bethany Williams said, Bottas has secured a role with the Merc next year, dedicated to destroying the opposition at all costs.
Oh, good old Valtteri.
Well,
he's on top form this weekend,
yes,
wasn't he?
But
absolutely.
I want to disagree with something, because it was not one of his usual terrible starts. Normally he does bad starts, but there was a weird stat that I think that was the first time in his career he's retired on the first corner of a race. So not that I'm defending Bottas, but he doesn't make a habit of careening into other drivers.
Well, nobody makes a habit of it.
Well, Verstappen.
It still happened. We've been talking about Bottas for, 3 years, about how he needs to up his game if he wants to keep his Mercedes seat. And now I've said that, maybe he will keep his Mercedes seat because he's been on thin ice for 3 years. But he's got to perform. He's got George Russell breathing down his neck. Hamilton's, you know, up there fighting for the win. He's been very underwhelming. All he needed to do was not have a terrible start and then take out half the grid.
But then that meant that Hamilton did really well. They're leading both championships thanks to Bottas.
Inadvertently, and I'm sure we'll get to that, because yes, in theory, he did put Hamilton in an ideal place to pick up maximum points. But as we all know, if we watch the race, that didn't quite happen. But Bottas was not around to help after that. He sort of, you know, kamikazed his way into most cars.
I mean, it was pretty impressive.
I mean, when you consider that all he did really was actually lock up a little bit, he did a lot of damage. So who did he take out? He took out
Norris.
Both the Red Bulls.
Norris snookered into Verstappen. And then Bottas hit Perez.
And then
I think.
Because Bottas had bounced off Norris and went into Perez.
And then, Stroll went off and took out, was it Ricciardo as well? I don't know.
Yes, I was actually thinking that Stroll could probably just say, oh, Bottas, oh my God, look what he's done.
I mean,
he took me out.
Yeah, maybe he did.
Took out Leclerc, oh, I can't believe it, and Ricciardo.
And Leclerc.
So half the grid were damaged to start with.
Then you kind of miss the old days of running back for the spare car, don't you? And having that excuse the whole race where they go, oh, the spare car set up for Perez. Not that that would ever happen, but you know.
They should have had just like two spare cars, but whoever gets there first can have them.
Oh, and they're just like, they're just grey.
Yeah, exactly. They're not branded. Although in the first pit stop, you can sort of do very quick like stamps with your sponsors on it if you want
That'd be good.
But the first people back to the car get the car.
Well, they have to go through like a little paint spray machine. So it's just one colour. But
do you think this will do his chances of a race seat any favours?
There is no way on God's earth that Bottas is going to drive for Mercedes next year, which is exactly why I think Bottas will be driving for Mercedes next year.
Because that would be the most F1 thing ever.
Or what's going to happen is that Russell's going to go to Mercedes, Bottas is going to go to Williams, mm-hmm. and then it's going to turn out that Williams have made the best car next year for the new rules.
And then Bottas will be number two to
Latifi.
Who, as we've discovered this weekend, is actually one pretty good.
Most points scored in the Williams ever.
Amazing. Yeah, certainly in a good few years.
The fallout of Nelson Bottas Jr.'s antics meant that a lot of drivers finished considerably higher up the field than maybe we'd have expected. Notably, Williams scored double points, with Latifi finishing seventh and George Russell in eighth. Ross Chaplin said, "Also, so happy for George. He's earned these points and yet gets outscored by his teammate." And Paul Johnson says, "Russell getting on team radio to tell them to compromise his race if necessary to help Latifi was clearly him showing Toto that he can be a better wingman than Bottas." I didn't think of it like that.
He was laying it on quite thick this weekend, was old Russell.
Yeah.
What with that and his crying at the end.
I mean,
I liked it.
When he said the thing about, give the race to Nicky, all this kind of stuff, like, don't compromise Nicky's race for me and everything. And you could just tell the Williams Peter going, yeah, of course we're fucking not. The other driver's in the lead. What do you think we're going to give you special treatment because you're there in like 11th, you dickwad? No, the other driver is in the points.
Just because you're halfway good, do you think we'll treat you better than sweet little Nicky, who seems like a lovely lad but isn't a very good driver? Although this weekend actually did all right.
Good driver.
In fact, it doesn't actually reflect that well on Russell that he didn't manage to get past Latifi.
But then
over the course of a whole race,
but then wasn't it a kind? You can't overtake very well at a Hungaroring. Mm-hmm.
True. And it's the Monaco of Hungary, you know.
Yeah, just less rights. But, you know, let's face it, Ocon only won because he got lucky at the start. It was basically whoever came out of that start best just basically stuck to their position for most of the race, for the most part.
It is very true. I had that in a kart race once. I was racing in a kart race in Dubai, and I'm, you know, a decidedly average kart racer. I think I started somewhere in the middle. And everybody crashed on the first corner. I ended up about 15 seconds in the lead. But then by about lap 10, everybody caught me and I ended up back in the middle again. And I did actually think that might happen. But then I suppose, A, it's quite hard to overtake there. And B, the only decent car that wasn't damaged was Hamilton. And then Mercedes proceeded to completely screw him, which we'll discuss later. It was one of those sort of perfect storm races, wasn't it, where at any other track, it wouldn't have ended up that way. Without the weather, it wouldn't have ended up that way. Without Bottas being Bottas, it wouldn't have ended up that way. Blah, 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 blah.
So Aston Martin's Sebastian Vettel finished second on the road, but he was later disqualified when scrutineers were unable to extract the mandated amount of fuel from his car. Aston is, however, appealing the decision. Nick Pepple said, "I don't understand how these teams keep running out of fuel. They know the penalty is a DSQ. This seems like one of the few things you wouldn't cut close." And Mike Morby asked, "Did Vettel get disqualified for standing up to Orban and his anti-LGBTQ+ politics?" And Adrian Lovell said, "The FIA reprimanded 4 drivers for wearing 'We Racers Won' t-shirts during the Hungarian national anthem, including Seb, whose t-shirt was also pride-coloured. The FIA should go fuck themselves and get in the bin. Bunch of hypocrites."
Well,
I agree with that.
Well, Sebastian Vettel got a lot of headlines this week, considering it was a race where Ocon won, Alonso performed really well, Bottas crashed into everyone, and Hamilton fought through the field. Vettel was in a lot of headlines.
And don't forget, for clearing up some rubbish at the British Grand Prix, he was in a lot of headlines the other week as well. He's having a social media blitz.
He is. He's clearly got a new PR person. And he doesn't even have social media, which is well impressive. Shall we talk about the fuel thing?
Yes.
Yes.
The fuel, as I understand, they need to have it's a litre, but let's call it a pint. Pint of fuel. I'm back in London next week.
Half a pound of fuel.
Yeah, that's nearly an armful. So you've got to have that left at the end so that the FIA can piss about with it. I've got to be honest, when I've seen them do like tests on fuel, they're talking like syringes and things. And a litre sounds like quite a lot.
I wondered that as well.
They're having a very dangerous drinking.
No, party. I reckon the stewards just get free fuel for the way home. 20 cars, 20 litres, there you go. 4 litres each, we're set.
So yeah, they're supposed to have, let's say, a pint of fuel to take out, and they could only get a third of a pint out of Vettel's car. But Aston Martin is contending that they did have the required amount of fuel left because they know how much they put into the car, and they've got the fuel flow sensor that Ferrari fucked about with a couple of seasons ago that lets them know how much fuel is going through the system. Maths, maths, maths. We know how much fuel is left in the car. But they couldn't get it out. The thing appears to be, and why I don't think their appeal is going to work, is that it's not necessarily you must have this much left. The rule is you must be able to get it out.
Woof.
And they couldn't get it out.
Woof.
And the fuel.
Why?
They couldn't get it out, so they're screwed.
Why don't they just keep a litre bottle of fuel in the cockpit? Like, just like an empty water bottle, fill it with petrol.
I mean, that seems fine. Yeah, just, I can't see
just have it rattling around his feet. And then at the end of the race, he just like hands it over and goes, there you go, mate.
That is a genuinely good idea. And in this post-Grosjean world, I can't imagine why that would be an issue.
Exactly. Well, Grosjean's not there to fuck it up.
Yeah, that should be fine. It might kick around the, might get stuck under his brake pedal, admittedly.
Yeah, whatever.
Mm. He might, you know, go into the footwell and he can't find it. But he could always have a lighter so he can light it up and see
exactly.
What's going on. Yeah, no, it's a
but
good
has
idea.
Has this happened before?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
It happened to Vettel, I think, actually, when he was at Red Bull. I read that this week. I didn't just pluck that. I didn't just pluck that from my memory. Oh, do you remember that time it happened when it was at Red Bull? I can barely remember that Vettel drove for Red Bull.
The idea is they did have the fuel, but it doesn't matter because they couldn't get to it, and the rule is they have to get to it. But lots of conspiracy people going, did he actually get disqualified because the FIA was pissed off that he was breaking all the rules because he was standing up for the LGBTQ.
I don't believe that, and yet I also believe that entirely.
I do. He's in Hungary, for God's sake.
Yeah, I reckon.
Yes. Like, so should we outline what happened for those that maybe didn't see it or weren't paying attention? So it wasn't just a little token gesture. He went all out in proclaiming his support, didn't he?
Yeah, all out.
So he had the cool shoes, he had the T-shirt, he had the mask.
And no bottoms.
He had literally a rainbow T-shirt. a rainbow T-shirt with Same Love written on it, which he wore not just at the beginning point where you're supposed to be allowed to protest by wearing T-shirts, but also then later during the national anthems when protests are absolutely not allowed because you can only stand up for human rights for this allotted 3-minute period before the race.
And
he got a reprimand with it. And he wasn't the only one either, although he wore more stuff than anybody else.
And in Hungary, you can't have any sort of same-sex relationships on TV, pre the watershed, and
well, yes.
Like that. So maybe
they've got this bill, haven't they? I'm not sure if it's actually law yet, but they're trying to make a law
now.
Where... Is it law
it
now?
Where
they go?
Yeah.
So, yeah, he was, I suppose, treading on legally thin ice, but good for him, I say.
Absolutely, and I think...
Bad luck, though.
I think they should do... So where's the next race going to be at? Is it Belgium?
Yes. I mean, I think let's say Spa.
They're okay.
It's probably Spa.
Their rights are okay, but I think all the grids should come on... All the cars should be in Pride colours. They should just... You know that Formula 1 2022 prototype they brought out the other week that had the holograms on? That's kind of Pride colours all at once. So just bring that on.
Yeah.
Let's get everyone...
Space Pride.
Space Pride. It's rare for sports people to really stand up. And I know that Hamilton has been this year. And a lot of the other drivers seem to quite reluctantly be protesting and doing their little kind of anti-racist video at the start.
Yeah.
But
I'll wear a T-shirt, but I won't do anything else.
I'll talk black and white in that film that is looking weirder after a year, but...
Hate is bad.
Yeah. Oh, I love money. What? No, I said it wrong. but Vettel standing up, and not that it matters, but as far as we know, Vettel isn't LGBT or Q, and...
He might be plus.
He could be plus. But it's just great for him to stand up.
So in other news, remember Silverstone? Ah, it seems like such a long time ago that Lewis Hamilton ruthlessly punted Max Verstappen into the wall, or Max dangerously chopped across Hamilton's legitimate overtake opportunity, or a racing incident happened and everyone got their knickers in a twist about it. None more so than Christian Horner, OBE, who got hapless Alex Albon to drive around Silverstone pretending to be Hamilton in a fruitless attempt to prove guilt at an FIA review. The FIA told him to knob off. Mercedes accused Red Bull of trying to tarnish Hamilton's reputation, and everyone came out looking like a bunch of schoolchildren.
This was just so F1-y,
wasn't
it?
They looked like such twats.
It's amazing.
What a bunch of bellends.
Can you imagine? Can you imagine being Alex Albon being told, right, you're fired, so you can't drive Red Bull anymore, but how about this? How about this for a laugh? after the British Grand Prix, because we're really pissed off, we want you to drive Hamilton's line with an old car. And then we're going to be a little bit annoyed that you can't go quite as quick as the seven-time world champion in a Mercedes.
In a Mercedes.
And then we're going to use that as evidence. It's like going to the police going, oh, I know. Sorry, I worked out you stole my car. I just did a reconstruction. Yeah. It turns out he was my mate.
Yeah. I stole somebody else's car, and now I know how they
did it. I did it. I stole my own car.
It's so ridiculously petty and stupid. I think pretty much everyone now, apart from bellends on the internet, that are, you know, dying their
wall. Oh, you mean fans or dying the wall. As I call them, the fucking Dutch.
Okay. Yes. Sure. Well, no, Hamilton fans as well. There's people are set in their positions on both sides. It was a fucking racing incident, guys. Come on, get over it. We've all forgotten.
No. Hamilton can't do any wrong. It was the fucking Dutch.
No, well, Verstappen can't do any wrong, apparently.
The Dutchie on the left-hand side.
But the fact that it's not just the fucking internet worrying about it. The fact that Christian Horner, OBE, is releasing statements, you know, where he has pull quotes every fucking 5 minutes with Christian Horner OBE written at the bottom of it. Nobody cares about your OBE. It's not even it's like the shittest of all awards.
You would turn down OBE, Phil, is that what you're saying?
Yes, I would.
And Chica, you would take an OBE.
I mean,
I would take an OBE. Thank you.
You can have mine.
Much.
And then on your wedding certificate, you'd get it wrong and be like, oh, it's OBE. A British bronze certificate. Sorry.
My dad may be a waiter, but I've got an OBE.
So, Phil, how high up the food chain would you have to go? Would you refuse a knighthood?
I would. Yeah.
Oh.
Not a big monarchist, so it'd be a bit hypocritical of me to accept an award
from
the monarchy.
It'd be handy, wouldn't it? It'd be handy when you're at Chica's dad cafe, you can get a table.
If I've done something good enough to get myself any kind of award, I've probably got some clout in other ways. But it's irrelevant because, you know, I don't think... God, you know, it's very kind of people to nominate me. But
well, you haven't seen her for 15 years, but if you open the door now, Phil, the Queen is coming into Hayward Heath to keep you united. This is awkward.
Laura. What was I saying about... I was ranting about Christian Horner OBE. And then organising this fucking test, which is stupid. And then going to the FIA with this fucking letter and this thing saying, we've done this. Stupid. Mercedes could have just taken the high line and just gone, all right, fine, didn't work. You know, say, suck it behind closed doors. But then they come out with this bloody statement where they're just like, oh, the Red Bull management are seeking to tarnish the good name of Lewis Hamilton. It's like, come on, rise above it. Very disappointed in Toto Wolff. I thought he was better than this. This is the kind of shit you expect from Horner and Helmut Marko.
I've gone off Toto a bit the last couple of years.
He's gone a bit.
Why?
He's lost his ice cool veneer.
It's
this
like
season,
when
it?
That. Oh, what's the company that bought Mercedes? Bought into Ineos?
Ineos.
I think since they bought in, I think Toto Wolff has gone from being quite rich to very fucking rich. And I think it's changed him.
But he's probably not as rich as Jim Ratcliffe, who is the bloke that owns Ineos, who is very rich.
But didn't Toto Wolff's job change this season?
Yeah, he's now a waiter.
So current Formula 2 driver and notorious arse bucket Dan Ticktum said that he's been given the boot from Williams, a move announced shortly after he went on a gaming live stream slagging off Nicholas Latifi. Coincidence? Probably not, actually, as Dick Tantrum has a history of being a thoroughly unpleasant twat. So it seems likely Williams jettisoned him off for a different reason entirely. Anyway, that likely marks the end of Tantric Dickhead's chances to get into F1. So expect to see him try and weasel his way into an IndyCar drive or something similar.
Dan Ticktum. It's almost a shame he's not going to make it into F1 because he would provide a lot of material. He's not quite Mazepin levels of... Not quite Marzipan levels of awful. Like, he's not sexually assaulted people. And I don't think his dad is a...
No, but he is clearly...
But he's a prime Bellend.
Not only is he a Bellend. So he got fired from the Red Bull Young Drivers... Well, he got a reprimand from the Red Bull Young Drivers thing. Got like a year ban for doing that kind of overtaking cars under a safety car and then crashing into a teammate he was pissed off with. Then he said something that Red Bull fired him for. Then Williams took him on as a kind of junior driver. And at that point, you think, do you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to shut the fuck up. Oh, no, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to slag off one of the Williams drivers on a live stream. But the best thing was, did you hear how he was slagging him off? He was singing to the theme.
Piss poor.
He was singing to the theme of Scooby-Doo. The TV is a poo.
Some sort of seven-year-old
driver of the year. He is our driver of the year.
Cut me deep.
What's sort of a shame about this is that Dan Ticktum all this aside, it's actually a really good driver. Although, having said that, Latifi, I think, finished second in F2, and Dan Ticktum is nowhere near second in F2 at the moment. But
you mean Latifi, point really scorer for Williams? Fucking
yes, exactly.
My hero.
Leading point scorer for
like
Williams.
Nigel Mansell, Latifi. That's the most points anyone's ever scored for Williams.
It's almost sad, but then you realise what a prick he is. So,
what a prick.
You know, he'll probably go to IndyCar because they'll take any old twat, so...
Tell us how wrong we are. You can tweet us at For F1's Sake or find us on Facebook where we're For F1's Sake or email us at wrong@ff1s.com. But alternatively, if you think we are right, seriously, take a month off and think about why that is a silly idea. But thank you to everyone who has bought us a beer after our live show experiment. They are... Alistair Thanks, White, who says, hopefully this helps make you all reach your FIA mandated post-podcast beer volume.
Yay. Yeah, we've done that joke.
Maybe.
Yeah, yeah.
Tim Wren, who says, felt I finally had to buy you a pint because Terry was in such good form over the Silverstone weekend and can only imagine what's going to be made of Bottas deciding to take up curling.
Well, one...
Hang on a fucking minute, Tim.
One, Tim...
Terry was in such good form.
Well done, Tim. I agree, I was in such good form.
Just Terry, was it?
I mean...
I was pretty great, let's face it.
Apparently we were shit.
Hey, he doesn't say you were shit. Tim. He just says you weren't
How
as good
pints?
As me.
How many pints? He said, I finally had to buy you a pint.
Yep.
So Terry gets a pint. Yep. Nothing
we
for me and Chica.
We got a tap water from Tim.
Look, I'll stretch to a lime and soda. But also, well done, Tim, because actually none of us has mentioned curling as a joke for Bottas, and that's a really good joke.
Mark Berry, who says, happy summer break, and could Phil let us know his best bib brand he mentioned the other day? Sorry if it's a bit off topic, but our toddler is a nightmare.
I absolutely
Oh, hang on a minute, hang on a minute.
Sponsor the podcast.
Hang on a minute. So, so it's Phil's it's Phil's bib brand, is it? You're not asking me or Chica about our bib brands. Jesus Christ.
Just looking at my bib.
It's not yet my bib brand, but if they want to, you know, if they're looking for investment, I haven't got any money, but if they want to sponsor the podcast, they're very welcome. I would recommend a brand called Bibado, B-I-B-A-D-O. They're very good, but make sure you get the newer ones because the earlier ones had pretty crap fastenings around the neck and they kept coming
off.
Oh, God, this is...
Bimoa, yeah. The Alonso's bib brand.
David Anderson, he says, I was chuffed to be your first live guest. Keep up the great work and have a few beers on me.
Thank you, David.
Yeah.
Great to speak to you.
Must update the website, that reminds me.
Stephen Lamb, he says, a Sunday show to rival Pissed Apex gets my dosh.
Brilliant. I mean, don't get used to Sunday shows because that was maybe not a one-off, but not an every week off.
Charles Moussard, he says, enough for three pints, way more than Seb had left. Oh!
Very true. Also a bit of burn to producer Matt, but thank you very much, Charles. No pint for you, Matt, sorry.
Jacob Rout Moore, who said, lol, not so long ago I was failing school and had zero money. Although he said, hey'd zero money, but that's what happens when you fail at school. And all I had was F1. Then I saw this video about online business model, and then I had a go. Now I'm fucking loaded, baby, and you guys help loads and make me laugh. So thank you.
I feel like
thank you.
I feel
Jacob.
Like we've been given money by a spam comment.
Yeah,
I don't understand.
I feel like this is probably illicit money, and it or maybe a Ponzi scheme of some sort. And we now owe somebody more money.
Click this link so
we
if,
have
for Bitcoin. What?
I don't understand Bitcoin. Do you understand Bitcoin?
I've got Bitcoin.
Have you?
Let me tell you what happened with Bitcoin. I invested at the start of this year €1,000 in Bitcoin.
Did you
yes,
really?
Yes, I did, because someone told me Square is to make money. That €1,000 in the space of 4 months became €2,000, and I'm like, Jesus fucking Christ, this Bitcoin thing is amazing. Then Elon Musk said something, and it's worth €700. So there's my investment tip. Get rid of Elon Musk.
You say that, I had a Tesla in this week, it was really good.
Well, you should. You had your chance to talk about it. You didn't talk. You talked about fucking Olympics instead.
I had to talk about the Olympics. That's too much. I've done. Normally, I don't do much stuff. Now I've done too much stuff.
Edward Ludlow, who says, "Not bought you around for a while, so probably about time." As podcasts go, it's an okay one, I guess. Oh, Edward,
it's pretty accurate.
That's exactly the kind of fan I want to keep.
Yeah, not too crazy.
Yeah, nonchalant fans. Just kind of ambivalent.
Yeah, he's not gonna. He might come along to a live show if we're sort of in his town.
Yeah, he won't buy a t-shirt.
He's not gonna camp outside.
He
our
won't
house.
Buy a t-shirt, but he wouldn't say no to one if we gave it to him.
He might buy a mug.
Yeah, he'd be the
like
sort.
One every
he'd be the sort to buy
years.
A sticker, but not actually put stick it on anything.
Yeah. Just get it and put it in a drawer.
Yeah. I like him.
Yeah,
good work, Ed.
Thank you, Ed. You're like our ideal fan.
and David Sayer, who says, please fix the hot weather and make it cooler.
Done. You're welcome.
Is it cool again over there? Because it's gone quite warm today.
Yeah.
Cool.
About 20 here today, probably. Bit of rain here and there.
I'm wearing a jumper.
Wow.
Also a donation from Chris Horner's Unendingly Flapping Gums.
It's weirdly disgusting, but thank you, Chris. It might be.
I hope it is.
Who knows?
If you're listening, you're a
That's OBE to you.
Thomas Gasser.
Thomas, thank you so much.
Alistair Hawkins.
Sounds like he writes crime novels.
He'd be A.E. Hawkins.
George Kalis.
George, I never heard that surname before. I like it. George Kalis. Greek, maybe?
And Rian Parkin.
Just R.R. Parkin.
R.R.R. Parkin.
And if he's your brother, he'd be R.R.R. Parkin.
And a thank you to our monthly donors keeping us in beer through the summer breaks. And this time we celebrate Ian Cox, William Yay. Boyce, Ooh. Charlie Ooh. Fraser, Keith Falconer, yes. Jenny and Ralph yes. Brynard, Andrew yes. Cunningham, Bryce Brilliant. Davies.
Amazing. Thank you, guys.
Join them. Support the show by going to ff1s.com/pint.
We will,
we'll team you.
Oh, no. That's a different podcast.
Alpine!
What? We can't have Alpine first.
Yes, we can. And this is when we all realise why Alpine is called Alpine and not Alpine, even though that's how it's spelled, is because Alpine rhymes with team. Ocon would probably not have been able to win the race if his comrade Alonso hadn't held off Hamilton. Tell me how you felt when Ocon crossed the line.
Underwhelmed, I'd forgotten about him. I was too busy worrying about Hamilton and Alonso.
I don't think this is very fair. Like, Alonso somehow managed to weed himself into a position where he won the race for Ocon, to the point that even Ocon, perhaps unwisely, but in all the kind of post-race interviews, was going, basically was being told, bib o'clock. Is that your Bibberama or your Bibberlicious?
It did. Although it didn't make a noise this time. I don't know why. Sorry, I did it earlier.
But Ocon, did you hear any of the interviews? Because he basically went, no, Alonso's... Everyone told me that Alonso was like really horrible and a right shit, but actually...
What was
he's
that
been
about?
Really nice. And he said it on like two or three different interviews, yeah. which I'm thinking, yeah. mate, don't let Alonso know that people have told you that he's a shit, because...
Yeah. So many people told me that Alonso was an absolute bellend, like a real shitbag, like one of the worst people you have ever met. Yeah, but actually, yeah. he's not that bad.
You can see the rest of the team being like, Stoffert, just shut up.
You didn't say that. Whereas Alonso's there going, yeah, so I won the race for Esteban. And, you know, I mean, he's on the podium, but it's like my name on the trophy. Do you know what I'm saying? Yeah.
I mean, you know, fair play to him. He did, this is Alonso, not Ocon, obviously. Ocon, this is like Ocon's only good performance of the year. I think all year we've been saying how disappointingly shit he's been since he got his new contract. Then he comes through and spawns a race win. This was Alonso's race. And let's face it, we've given Alonso a bit of a ribbing every now and again. But he drove really well.
No, we're going to go back. No,
not well enough to win, obviously.
We're not going to talk about Alonso. Look, Ocon, let's face it, he got very lucky on the first lap and then was ahead in a circuit where you can't really overtake. And the person second was, you know, fair play to him, fucking Vettel, who, let's face it, isn't the best at racing in recent years. So, in a weird way, it was quite an easy win.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair enough, to be honest. You know, the stars all aligned.
Yeah.
The only person that could have beat him was Hamilton, who managed to go back to the grid, and then still probably would have beat him had it not been for Alonso and his very good car.
Alonso with his beautiful hair. I've heard Alonso.
Unless bothered about it's like not. I'm less bothered about his hair. It's more his neck. What a
but
neck!
But the best.
You could crack walnuts with that neck.
But the best thing is, it was at the Hungarian Grand Prix in 2007 that it all kicked off with Alonso and Hamilton and McLaren. So there is some. Long term. So that was the race where he like did he punch a hole or pull the door off the motorhome or something in a tantrum?
Was that when he kicked Ron Dennis's back doors in?
No. That was Monaco. That was the party. That was the party afterwards. And a young Vettel was there in a t-shirt. And
but he took it off eventually.
Oof. Oh, I feel we've just crossed. Even I feel we've crossed a line there. But
But yeah, so like Alonso holding off Hamilton at Hungary, you know that he was in that car with his like little tiny erection going, I'm getting you back. I'm getting you back, Lewis. And Lewis is going, what's...
Is that your Alonso?
I'm getting you back, Lewis. And Lewis is there.
It's me.
And Lewis is probably...
It's me, Alonso.
And Lewis is there going, ah, oh, who is that? That guy rings a bell. What's his name again? Fred. Fred? Did we meet on like a fan day? How you doing? You doing all right? Oh, well done. Oh, you're in the Formula One. Oh, good for you. Good for you.
You're one of those Make-A-Wish kids. Yeah. No, I mean, I don't know how exciting it was for, you know, the sort of the Netflix generation, but that was a masterclass in defending from Alonso.
Oh, it's you so and Alonso, hard. Get a room.
It was so good. I mean, I probably would. As long as he would tell me how to defend like that, I would. It's so hard to stop people who are much faster than you.
You've got to leave a penis width at the edge of the bed. And no swerving.
It was good. And Ocon was there as well.
Aston Martin. Sebastian Vettel, hero to zero in a few hours. Second podium of the year. Great drive. Charming interview. And then, bam, Aston Martin couldn't provide the fuel sample.
I'm very sorry. This has never happened before.
Stroll also...
couldn't produce the fluid.
Stroll also faced the wrath of the judges with a 5-place grid penalty for the next race after hitting Leclerc at turn one. What went wrong for him this weekend?
He hit Leclerc at turn one.
Well,
I mean, that didn't have much chance to do anything else, did he?
He slid all over the place, didn't he?
But also this is the funny thing about Vettel's race, is that the reason that he came second before the disqualification is that he had such a shit start. He was miles behind all the carnage. And then all the cars went off and he was like, oh, being so far back has its advantages. I'm second now.
It's a massive advantage. So basically, Stroll
just got everyone out of the way for him. Stroll and Bottas were just like going, don't worry, Vettel, we got you.
Stroll had a terrible weekend. He was rubbish in qualifying, and he lasted 200 yards in the race and then wiped loads of people out. So that was the end of him. Vettel did all right, apart from not being able to overtake Ocon, but admittedly, in a not amazing car on a track that is hard to overtake on. But I think we'll all remember him for the stuff that he did off track. Which is actually pretty remarkable.
Yeah.
When you think about it. When you think that he's got second on track in an Aston Martin, and that's not actually what we're bothered about. Well done.
Mercedes! This team should get an Oscar for providing top quality entertainment at the Hungarian Grand Prix. One driver fucked up the opening lap so badly that it made the rest of the race the best couple of hours of the season. The other one, well, boo as much as you like, Verstappen disciples, that was an incredible drive. In the words of Russell Crowe, after he's chucked his knife at the pot in Gladiator, were you not entertained?
Yeah, but Verstappen had half a car. You don't understand. Mm. Oh, I'm an expert on Formula One.
I mean, he pretty much did. Did you see his car?
I mean, it's true. He only had half a car.
But it was
still
entertaining. I'm not saying,
but it shouldn't,
I felt sorry for him.
It shouldn't have been that entertaining, because this was absolutely, you know, this was Bottas's great gift to Lewis and to Toto. You say, here, I sacrifice myself for the greater good, and I take out all your rivals in one fell swoop. Away you go, Lewis. Fly to victory. And then they have the restart, and then every single person pits except for Hamilton, which was one of the most surreal things I've ever seen.
It was amazing. I mean, it was peak F1 at its peakiest, to see just Hamilton on the grid and just the charade of the five lights going on. It's like, do we have to? Yeah, we have to. Come on,
just wave your flag.
Just go. They could have just said, right, Hamilton, whatever you want to go, just go. It's fine.
I did hear, and I can't remember where I heard it, so it might not be true, that the guys in the safety car that follow the grid when they set off from a start went hairing off after Lewis when he started on his own, and then suddenly realised that they had to slam on the brakes when everybody then came out of the pit lane because they were in danger of overtaking
them.
And
it turns out the safety car is in second place.
Yeah, amazing.
So, but this was interesting because, so, I was listening to another podcast about this, so I'm not going to pretend this is my insight, but the problem they had is that, they didn't think that everyone would pit. They thought like half the people would pit. And so they decided not to pit because Mercedes are the first pit garage. So if he'd got in the pits where he was, he wouldn't have been allowed to leave because it would have been unsafe release because all the other cars would be going in and out kind of thing. So they realised...
It's an argument.
They realised that by not pitting him would mean he wouldn't be in the lead. So it'd be better to not pit him where he's going to end up 10 seconds behind everybody else.
That makes yes. sense.
It's a thought. It's, however, a fucking terrible thought. Because, I mean, what's the worst case scenario? He goes into the pits. And, okay, absolute worst case scenario, he has to wait for everybody else to go past him and then go. He's not going to be absolutely last because he'd have been first into the pits. And even once the last person goes past him and he goes, he'll at least be past those people that just went past him because he'll be past them before they get in their pit garage and out. So he won't be last. He might be quite far down the field, but he won't be last. Mm. If you stay on the what is obviously the wrong tyre on a completely bone-dry track and then pit, you will be last by a country mile. So the fact that Toto Wolff doubled down on this strategy afterwards is absolutely baffling to me. I mean, it's obvious it was the wrong decision. It did admittedly put them in a slightly difficult position because there is a valid point that he would lose places in the pit, but he's not going to lose all that time that he did.
Oh yeah, undoubtedly.
In the
not
event.
Pitting left him not only last but last by a country mile.
It was so stupid.
But I don't know what he was thinking.
Well,
I don't understand, and I was a bit confused at this, and I wasn't sure if I wasn't paying attention, but the track was drying. And you can change your tyres under a red flag. So why the fuck were they all on the wet tyres?
I mean, I guess that they hadn't been out and hadn't realised quite how dry it was.
But they've got people, they've got cameras, they've got radars.
Yeah, but I don't think you can tell just by looking at it.
Well, somebody could have won the race by that.
I mean, obviously we can because we're Formula One experts because we've watched quite a lot of races on television. But I think when you're making a decision like that, you want to... you want to go out and confirm it, and they knew that they could pit if need be. But, I mean, it did seem pretty obvious from the TV pictures, like, there's no water on that track. It's very dry. Also, it dried really fast. It went from soaking enough for everybody to crash on the first lap to bone dry in, what, 20 minutes, maybe?
Yeah.
Williams! Two words I thought I would not be saying in the depressing Williams section of the podcast are double points. There they are. Latifi hugged everyone and Russell cried. Does this change anything, though? I guess now that Williams have points that they'll be able to get their hands on more dollar for next season. But does this actually mean anything this season?
Actually, it might. Does it? Was it this year they brought in the whole thing about where you are in a championship means how much wind tunnel time you're allowed or something? No, because that means they get less wind.
I think that's based on where you finished the previous season, isn't it?
I thought it carried on throughout the championship. But then...
Maybe it does.
But that would mean they'd get less...
But they can't work through the summer anyway.
But that would mean they get less wind tunnel time because they've done well.
Oh my God, this is...
This is terrible. This is terrible. Quick.
Oh my God,
we haven't got any fuel in the car, honest.
No wonder Russell was crying. I would have thought it would be... I mean, just purely from a commercial point of view, the fact that they... Let's be honest. I think even Haas have said, yeah, we're not going to catch them now, are we? They're now going to... Where are they? Like eighth now?
Oh, yeah. I mean...
Which is several million quid's worth better off, probably. All they have to do is not somehow lose points during the season or for there to be another freak race and Haas and I presume it's Alpha they're ahead of, suddenly make a load of points. When they're now canvassing for sponsors and they're saying, look, we're going to be eighth, not tenth this year, suddenly the sponsors will be like, oh, they're much more successful than Haas or Alfa Romeo. Maybe we'll go to them and give them loads of money. So, I mean, it can't do them any harm. And then, they'll get, what's it worth, a few million quid? It's worth having. Maybe they could get another driver.
It's kind of weird. The more I think about this race, the more I realise how dull it was for a very exciting race. Because it was just like, once it all settled down, they were just kind of stayed in their positions. You know, there was the big moments of drama, which were more exciting than most races. You had the Bottas stuff, you had the ridiculous Hamilton restart, you had the Alonso
Hamilton stuff. You know, it's all there are very exciting moments in the race, but on the whole, they kind of came out of the second bit of the race and they were just kind of basically stayed in their positions. And if you were lucky at that point, you kind of stayed there.
No, there was a bit of going on. And you know, this isn't fucking touring cars. You don't want everyone overtaking 15 times a lap and crashing into each other. You need the build-up. You need the anticipation. You need the foreplay before the meet.
What?
I don't know. I've had two beers.
Red Bull. Someone needs to send this team back to nursery. Their reaction to the race is a Mercedes conspiracy theory to sabotage their chances, and they ignored the fact that Bottas took out most of the field in his mission to destroy Verstappen's dreams. So Verstappen is being a little diva about it, but now Horner is saying bitchy things. What is it going to take for them to grow up?
They'll never grow up.
No,
between Horner and Helmut Marko, I mean, they just talk utter shit a lot of the time.
They're on a populist mission at the minute, and every now and again I delve into the kind of Max Verstappen fan base on Twitter, and it's actually quite remarkable. I mean, there is an equal Hamilton fan base as well, so I'm not pretending it's a new thing, but there is this kind of like religious fervour behind that Verstappen can't do any wrong, to the point that, and older listeners will remember that back in the kind of Hamilton, you know, Ferrari, McLaren days, you know, the FIA was nicknamed hilariously Ferrari International Assistance because, like, you know, in Schumacher days, the disqualifications would go in his favour. You know, the rules always seemed to help out Schumacher. And FIA being called Ferrari International Assistance is, you know, it's not the best joke in the world, but it's a joke. It's funny, you know.
It fits the letters.
The Verstappen fans have called it the MFIA, which is the Mercedes for International Assistance. And it's like, you just keep seeing it everywhere, MFIA, and I had to look it up. And it's,
I have seen that. But I've also seen it with a little a tiny A between the M and the F, so it says Mafia.
Oh,
because the A
even,
wouldn't actually work.
That's actually
wouldn't actually
good.
Work, but Mercedes for internal assistance. Yeah, it's pathetic.
That's it, Mercedes. Oh fuck, it's terrible.
Shit jokes were way better back in the early 2000s,
yeah,
weren't they?
Before we had Twitter.
It is very silly. I mean, we've touched on them being stupid little bitches, but I think they were probably right to be a bit aggrieved by the goings on.
But is this true?
Because it wasn't actually their fault that they got completely taken out.
So is this true? Because they're talking about
lost an engine.
They're talking about, because of the budget cap, they can't afford to basically repair the, like, you know, there was a thing saying that the other team should pay for the car, blah, blah, blah. But is that really a thing, that they're going to actually not have enough money in the budget cap to fix a car?
If it is, I mean, it has been an expensive couple of races for them, but I cannot believe that they haven't budgeted a fairly substantial amount for repairs.
They're not going to be like,
within their cost
hang
cap.
On, we didn't think anyone would crash into us this season.
Yeah, yeah. All right, guys, I think we're going to win, but we can't crash any time. It's fucking motorsport. Of course you're going
to
crash.
Or they'll
you
just
must
say
have
to
a
Perez,
contingency budget.
Sergio, do you mind if we don't give you as much as we said we would this year? Oh, no, it's fine. I'm just happy to be here.
I mean, you jest, but I can absolutely see that happening. They probably can be justified in feeling a little bit annoyed from this race, because unlike the last race where, you know, you could absolutely argue that Verstappen had at least something to do with the accident, none of this was either his or Perez's fault, and it'd be very expensive. They lost a lot of points. Perez's engine's broken, so he'll have to take a grid penalty at some point in the future. They've been hard done by, and it's unfortunate, but that's racing, you know. If one, there's one thing that Formula One isn't, it's fair.
Ferrari. Leclerc may have been clouted by Stroll, meaning there was more Ferrari on the track than on the Ferrari. But Sainz, however, he drove like an absolute hero and worked the podium. Are we going to see more Sainz podium in the second half of the season, or will it need a bunch of the field to be taken out in order to get there?
We didn't actually see him on the podium.
That's true. He was on the podium after Vettel's disqualification.
Yeah.
True.
The podium
but
of our hearts.
He's still officially on the podium. But I've got to say, he was kind of scarily impressive with his radio messages, kind of working out what Hamilton's going to do and how they're going to pit. Like, that was kind of like next level stuff where you're like, how the fuck does he know?
Are you a time traveler?
Yeah.
He had an almanac.
It did sound a bit like he was just there going, oh, Hamilton's going to pit again. They're like, no, he's not going to pit. No, Carlos, he's not going to pit. He's already pitted once. We've looked at the garage. They aren't having a cup of tea.
Is that Binotto? That's amazing.
That was all of Ferrari because they're all
okay,
lazy. It was amazing. It was fucking brilliant.
It was fine.
It wasn't fine. It was great. And what I just said was great. Come on, the thing that he was able to spot the strategy was amazing.
That was good. Thank you. That was good, but he still, you know, spawned his way up to.
He spawned his way up
because everybody crashed. Spawned his way up to third because everybody else crashed.
Spawned my way up.
McLaren. It was the end of the impressively placed streak for Norris when he was Bottas's patient zero. How did he deal with it? Well, when Bottas apologised, he said, "Apologies don't change anything." Wow, his words cut deep. What would you say to Bottas?
I did think that Norris was a little bit churlish in his response.
Salty.
Yeah.
I mean, understandable.
No, I think he could have gone, do you know what? I've not had a Sunday off for ages. I'm going to go and watch the Grand Prix. Do you know the thing I miss about Sundays is watching the Formula One? Because Norris is funny, so he should have had a funny response.
Yeah.
He's not so funny this year. He's not that on the head this year. Because he can either be funny or he can drive well.
Well,
because last year he was quite funny, you know, he was the meme lord, so zany. This year he stopped all of that, but he's driving really well. So I think it's understandable that he was rather pissed off. I'd have been pissed off. Ricardo was also there.
I mean, Ricardo was involved in the first quarter thing, wasn't he? And finished 11th. Great.
Pretty convenient excuse, wasn't it? Oh, my car was damaged, that's why I've not been very good.
Oh, it's windy. Oh.
It's, I don't know, it just feels like Norris is carrying McLaren at the moment, and we're now, that was race 10, wasn't it? 10 races in, Ricciardo's still nowhere near. How long will they give him?
Is his contract up at the end of this season?
I
don't actually know how long his contract is.
Well, the thing is, whatever happens, next year's car is going to be so different, he might be able to drive it. But it is just...
That's a good point. And he's probably got input into next year's car. It's not just going to be like...
I don't know. It's one of those things where you go, well, technically, like, we know that Ricciardo is a good driver, right? We know that for a fact. He's not a good driver. But is he one of those drivers who's just been, like, lucky or unlucky in his career that actually that Red Bull that he left willingly was a car that really fucking suited him? The Renault, it took him like a good half a season to get into the Renault. You know, he was like moaning about the brakes for the first half of the season. You know, everything's not right for him, blah, blah, blah.
He's very fussy about his brakes, isn't he?
He's a brake diva. Yeah, and the problem is he's gone from being the next big thing to, you know, his third team after, Red Bull, Renault, McLaren. His stock is getting lower and lower and lower, and you can't excuse it anymore. So I feel like we'll see how next year goes, but, you know, he's on a warning. He's on a disciplinary.
He is. I mean, I feel like we've probably talked about this before, but he seems like he's like Button. He needs the car exactly as he likes it, or he can't. He's not very good. Gets exactly as he wants it, he's really good.
Which is a shame, because he doesn't seem hopeless. Like Button. He seems like quite a nice guy.
They're like, wow. What have you got against Jenson Button?
I fucking hate Jenson Button. We've been through
this. Why do you hate Jenson Button? Have we?
Jenson Button was born on the 20th of January 1980, which is 3 days after I was born.
Oh, right.
So,
I was going to say, it's a weirdly stalkerish thing to know.
No,
but okay.
I know it because he's 3 days older than me. And then when I was 10 years old, I remember watching News Round.
Wow.
Panorama, yeah.
It was News Round or Blue Peter. And I was just thinking about getting into go-karting, but I'd found out that you actually need some money to do go-karting. So my family couldn't afford it because I was poor. And then I saw a thing on News Round with John Craven, or maybe Blue Peter, where there was this featured out of this 10-year-old boy called Jenson Button. And I never forgot that fucking name because he was my nemesis.
Wow.
And then years later, he becomes fucking world champion. And I'm doing a fucking podcast talking about him.
Yeah, okay. Well, sucks to be Jenson then, I guess.
He's not bitter.
Is he having a great time drinking beer bought for him by fans?
No, he's getting knobbed off by a supermodel, probably.
I mean, we can only see your top half, so we don't know what's going on.
Trust me, I am not getting knobbed off. Are you done? Yeah, money's on the mantelpiece.
I mean, that could be a supermodel, Terry.
Could be a supermodel. but not for not for 20 euros.
Oh dear.
McLaren.
I think that covers McLaren, doesn't it?
AlphaTauri. Tsunoda may have moaned a lot and Gasly put some weird pictures on his Instagram over the weekend, but by the end of Sunday, it was a successful weekend for AlphaTauri. Double points and fastest lap. When do you think an F1 driver has to hand over control of their Instagram account to a PR company?
I haven't seen. I'm going to look up. I'm going to live react as they do on the internet to Pierre Gasly's pictures.
I've also not seen Pierre Gasly's. Clearly, we're not down with the gram as you are, Chica.
He put up.
There's a picture of him
Picture of him between some sets of tyres, and that kind of creeped me out.
Oh yeah, he's just been standing there for hours.
Yeah. He looks very staring. Short.
It's Tsunoda. Tsunoda has to act as both of them.
I'm more looking at the one with his mates in Ibiza, where they've all got what I can only assume are very expensive sunglasses, but they all look ridiculous.
I mean, I don't think he...
Yeah, they are some silly sunglasses.
He's done a story, so he's in Ibiza with his mates. They've all got their tops off.
Yeah.
Ooh.
He's probably going to some of the clubs. I don't know what the clubs are these days. Man U Mission, is that still a club?
Man United.
Probably. Ministry of Sound.
Ministry of Justice.
Yeah.
Ministry of Brexit.
I don't remember seeing AlphaTauri all weekend. And then I looked at the results and I was like, oh, they did really well. Did they actually show them? I don't remember seeing them at all.
Yeah.
But, you know, well done. Tsunoda didn't spanner it into the wall all weekend, did he? That I remember.
Yeah.
Alfa Romeo. An unsafe release into Marzipan, whoopsie-daisy, and last place. The question I'm going to put to you is, guess how much Antonio Giovinazzi weighs?
Okay, let's go with this. Is this in kilograms?
Is this a cheeky quiz?
I mean, it's only one question, so I guess it doesn't really...
It's a mini
yeah,
cheeky quiz.
A cheeky question. Round. Whoever gets it right wins.
Okay, so I am 6 foot
It's in kilograms.
Three. Okay, I'm 6 foot three, okay. And I am 77 kilograms.
Shit, man, you're really light.
Yeah.
God, I'm a heavy bastard.
So I reckon 4-1 drivers are about a foot less, and I reckon a foot is about 10 kilos. So I'm going to say he's 66, but he's also fitter than me because he's a 4-1 driver. I'm going to go 62 kilos.
All right, I think Giovinazzi is actually quite tall. So I'm going to go... It's going to go 70 kilograms.
Ready?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Fuck, Phil, you're exactly right. He is 70 kilos.
Oh!
I didn't take into account his hair.
Yeah, see, you know, say what you like about me, but I know my Italian man weight. I'd like to talk about the crash into Marzipan.
Okay, you do that first, because I've got something else to talk about.
I fucking love that. I thought it was brilliant.
It was great.
I mean, it was a terrible release, and apparently it was due to some sort of weird computer glitch system. Yeah, because it's all computerized now. You know, the days with the man and the lollipop are long gone. So it's all computerized, and apparently there was a glitch where it went go, and then it went oh no stop, and then it went go again, and Raikkonen just waited there, and the lights went green, so we went, and he basically just tapped Marzipan on the front and broke his thing, and that was him out of the race. And I was like, that's great. Nobody got hurt, but we got rid of the most hated driver, everybody's happy. And that was one of the highlights of the race for me.
Okay, we all know those great drives in the wet where a driver, often Jenson Button to be fair, will go onto the tyre, change tyres and be the only person on that tyre, and that will turn out to be a really great thing. And then at the start of the race, when Giovinazzi was let's go to slicks. And then it's like, okay, are you sure? Yeah, let's go to slicks. It's quite wet out there. Let's go to slicks. And then there is that massive...
This isn't at the restart.
No.
This is at the very start.
This is the very start. And then Bottas has this big crash, and then they all... So Giovinazzi is at the back of the grid, and then Bottas has this big crash, and there's a red flag for 20 minutes, and the track's dry, and he's just like, Which wasn't his fault. He wasn't wrong, but it was just like...
Well, he was wrong.
But he was wrong. He was very
wrong. He was obviously wrong. He was like, yeah, let's go to slicks. Everybody else is on intermediates, which are better in the wet, and they still got they've still got no traction. You imagine if he'd have been in Bottas's place and had rocketed off on slicks. He wouldn't... He'd still be going now.
Amazing.
That was the highlights of their race, as far as I'm concerned. Yeah, Giovinazzi's optimism and Raikkonen taking out Marzipan.
Hey, yes. can't do it without making any noise, Phil, because your mute's on.
Oh, bollocks, that was really good.
Hey, yes.
Marzipan was shit and not really worth talking about, but Schumacher isn't. He did a drive that didn't involve points, but is definitely more impressive than usual. At one point, he defended from Verstappen and Russell. What do you think Schumacher is like if you went for a drink or a date?
Well, this is interesting because, one, I hear him talk German a lot in Germany, which is unusual for him.
Super gut.
It's just weird for a Formula One driver. I even get YouTube adverts where Mick Schumacher's talking German. And it's like, obviously, all drivers aren't English, but you grow up knowing that all drivers speak English. And it is weird to, like, just hearing Vettel speak German is actually quite weird, despite the fact he's German. Because how often...
Have you heard Bottas speak Finnish?
I've never heard him speak German.
He probably can speak German, let's be honest.
But what would I think about Schumacher if he went for a drink or a date? Unfortunately, I think I'm going to have to recuse myself from this question. Because...
No.
Come on now.
All of which brings us to the standings with Terry Saunders.
In first place, bizarrely, it's half his energy, it's Lewis Hamilton. In second place, it's half a car, it's Max Verstappen. In third place, it's just a half, thanks, it's Lando Norris, he's driving. Half the man he used to be is in fourth place, it's Valtteri Bottas, and his pint is half empty, it's Sergio Perez in fifth. Shine on halfy moon is Carlos Sainz, I don't understand either. Half a lap he did is Charles Leclerc. Half a smile, but remember when I won a race, that's Pierre Gasly. Whoa, you're halfway there. Whoa, living on a prayer. Teddy Ricciardo. Half an Alonso, that's Esteban Ocon in 10th. 50%, that's Fernando Alonso. Half a litre, it's Sebastian Vettel. Half a year of his career left, it's Yuki Tsunoda. Half a million in his pocket, it's Lance Stroll. Fucking hell, I got some points. It's Nicholas Latifi. He doesn't care about the game of standings. He got some points, good on him. I'm 41.5, you know, it's Kimi Raikkonen. And half a good idea was Antonio Giovinazzi with his tyre thing. And the constructors, because they're in Hungary and because the Hungarians hate the LGBT community, I thought I would do what would all the teams be if they were gay icons. So, Mercedes would be RuPaul because they like to dress up. Red Bull would be Elton John because of the tantrums. Ferrari would be Cher because they've been around forever. McLaren would be Liberace because it's very orange. Alpine would be Céline Dion, a bit French. AlphaTauri, Freddie Mercury likes vests. Aston Martin would be Princess Di because they're British and Americans love them. Old and English, it's Ian McKellen, that's Williams. And Alfa Romeo would be Judy Garland because they are tragic.
And now, for the man of the match of driving. Valtteri
Fernando
Bottas.
Alonso.
Oh, shit. Ooh.
And now it's time for the State of F1 with Terry Saunders.
Right, that's it. I'm calling time on this. I've had enough. Ocon winning is fun and all, but it's not in the spirit of F1. Surprise wins are amazing in F1, but only when they happen once in a blue moon. Vettel winning in Monza 2008, Parnis taking Monaco. These are tales of the ages. But surprise wins can only be surprise wins when they're rare. And last year, we've had Perez in a Racing Point and Gasly in an AlphaTauri. And before Gasly got his win, the last person that wasn't in a Mercedes, Red Bull or Ferrari was Kimi Raikkonen in 2013. And Pastor Maldonado won a Williams in 2012. Two shock results in 2 years rightfully mandated the hybrid era to stop such nonsense. We need to wait before shock results or they're not shocking. It's not that the individual driver isn't a surprise, but that the surprise itself isn't a surprise. It's too many. It's like we're almost expecting it. And the unusual result has become somehow usual. But don't worry, I have a solution. Scrutineering. Like Vettel needing a pint of fuel, and not at all because he wore a Pride t-shirt, at the end of the race, before the results are ratified, they need to go through the stewards to see how likely they are. Max Verstappen fans will love this because they always seem to forget that just because he's got the fastest car, it doesn't give him the divine right to the win. But under my system, it will.
After the race, iron out irregularities so we can have the proper order of fastest first and slowest last, the way God intended, if he existed, which he doesn't.
Haven't you just described qualifying?
Yes, I think we should probably not bother with Sundays, is what I'm saying.
That is it from us. It is goodbye to Phil Tromans.
Goodbye. We haven't had time to talk about Lewis Hamilton nearly fainting on the podium. What's that all about? Long COVID?
He might have long COVID.
I don't know. Might have. Who knows? I hope he's all right. But, yeah, it was a bit weird. So it was like Senna trying to lift up the... What year was that when he tried to lift up the trophy when he was knackered?
Oh, that was, 2006.
That's right, yeah.
And to Terry Saunders.
So, I'm privileged enough to be in a position where the Berlin E-Prix is taking place not 10 minutes from my door in a week this weekend. I will be in London, unfortunately, so I'm going to miss it entirely. But Jack Nicholls has been in touch, and these are private messages, but I'm going to read them out. He has said to me, hang on, let me just get to it. So I'm flying back to Berlin on Sunday because he's leaving on Monday. And I said, do you want to go for a drink? And he said, I'll let you know, Sunday night is the end of season awards, which I am taking to mean I've just been invited to the end of season awards.
I would say that definitely.
So I am going to fly back.
Get a new dress.
I'm going to get in. Because I didn't even know the season was ending. Don't give a shit. I didn't even know how many races there were. But I want to get there and just be like, what are you doing on my turf? Who wants some? So, Jack, if you're listening, invite, please, to the end of season awards. I will come straight from the airport with my suitcase. If I can get it. But I don't even know who's going to lead the championship. My best thing would be to just like give the guy who won the championship my bag. Just be like, right, where's the drink?
We'll be back in a month's time. In the meantime, check out our Facebook page, facebook.com/forF1'sSake, and follow us on Twitter @forF1'sSake. And you can still buy merch, Terry.
Can you? I mean, can you?
Yes.
Has anyone actually tried the link for a while? I haven't. FF1S.com/shop. I think you don't even need HTTPS. It's that old.
Ooh. Thanks for listening.
Works in Netscape.
Thanks for listening. See you in a month. I've been Chica Rares. Goodbye.
Love you all. Bye.
Goodbye.
Sports Social Podcast Network.